You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. It's the all-in clear-out sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue S for 0% APR for 84 months, or get an up to $5,500 cash purchase bonus on select other models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final hour, mail it in Friday on Overdrive, brought to you by Coors Light. Mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Brian Azio, Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. Jay's in action tonight. We'll head down to Buffalo. Keegan Matheson on the other side of the border. He will join us to set the scene down there and tee up a big series against Houston. We're tracking the Memorial, and DeChambeau's off the course, but there are a ton of videos coming out. People chirping him, calling him Brooksy. Like, this is going to get carried away, man. It's going to – all weekend, and this guy's going to be a Torrey Pines at the U.S. Open, and people are going to be calling him Brooksy.
All right, Brooksy.
Like, it's happening, man.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's one of those things where he has that personality where you either love him or hate him. And Brooks Koepka is not exactly the most lovable guy either.
No, he's not.
They've decided who they're siding with on this one. And I agree, Hayes, like, I don't know what to think of it because you want people to have fun and you're allowed to do whatever, but no one on golf wants this. Like, you can't have people like Happy Gilmore out there saying jackass. Like, it just, it's not a part of, and I know things are moving in a different direction with sports and it's not being as stuffy, but people don't want this. Like,
you don't want it to get to a point where it's like bullying, and not that this is like, I mean, bullying is a strong word, but you know what I mean, where you're just like doing it to be a nuisance.
Agitating.
Yeah. And you know, you're just doing it to bother someone constantly. That's a pro athlete that isn't bothering you. They're just performing. And it's not – the problem with chirping at golf tournaments is it is so quiet that the chirp can resonate, right?
Echoes.
And it can hit. Yeah, like if you're in a building with 20,000 people, like the guy on the ice doesn't hear an individual fan calling them Brooksy, you know, or at a baseball game. But if you're walking down a fairway and there's five people on the fairway and no one's talking and you yell out Brooksy, he's going to hear it every single time. Like, so it's a very different dynamic. And I guess what I'm saying is that because he's trying to get people thrown out, allegedly, and they are throwing people out, it's just going to take on a life of its own.
Dude, like, think about a Ryder Cup. Like, what's going to happen at a Ryder Cup, man? That gets...
Exactly. What? Like, the Euros, man, they go crazy over there.
They will be chanting Brooksy.
Yeah, yeah, they will be. They will
be. Where was it where one of the players was being chirped and he said, okay, you go and shoot, and the guy drained it? Wasn't that at a Ryder Cup?
I think it was Rory.
It
might have been at a Ryder Cup. I think you're right. I think it was a Ryder Cup, and he said, all right, tough guy, like, come over here and see if you can. And some guy comes out, he's got like jorts on.
Exactly.
Like Converse shoes.
He drained like a 15-foot putt or something.
Yeah.
Like something ridiculous.
And he blew it in, like, it was going 50 feet past. It just happened to hit the cup and drop, and he went nuts, and the crowd went crazy. I think it was McElroy. I think he might have bet him like $10 or something, gave him some cash, and said, "Thanks, man. Good stuff. See you later." Like, McElroy would have fun with that.
Yeah,
DeChambeau's incapable of having fun, I think. Like, it's just not his MO.
I don't like that fan interaction though, like, too much, because what is the line? That's the difference. Is what is the line? What's acceptable to yell? What's not acceptable to yell? You know. For the most
part, that's the thing, Jamie. Most people would agree that saying, hey, Brooksy's not that big of a deal.
You're not swearing. It's not, you know, vulgar. You know, it's not nothing that is going to, if it's up, if it picks up on the mic, no one's going to say, you got to censor
that.
You know, it's just, it's so personal, though, because it's clearly about Brooks Koepka. Like, obviously, these two. And DeChambeau had nothing to do with that either. He was just walking by. And the video gets out. Now DeChambeau's dragged into this big battle with Koepka that I'm not sure he wants. But anyway, shot even par today. DeChambeau's at 1-under. He'll make the cut. We got a lot of guys who are going to make the cut here. Currently, Cantlay's at 8-under. He shot 5-under today, man. He's in the lead. He's due for a big tournament. He's
That's
been pretty
my
bad
guy,
for a
right?
while. You don't have Cantlay. I don't think you picked him.
I had him on my list.
I wrote them down here.
I am pretty sure because I always go to Cantlay.
Did you? I don't remember who you took.
I don't think so.
I thought you took McElroy and Bryson.
Okay, June 2nd, golf picks.
Yep.
Hayes, Bubba Watson, Doc Redman, John Rahm, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Taylor Gooch, Connors, and Nick Taylor.
Right.
And is Stuart Sink, Jason Duffner, Rory McIlroy, Sammy, Mr. Burns.
Sam Burns.
Bryson DeChambeau, Harold Varner, Hadwin, and Hughes.
Yeah, you took Sammy Burns instead of Cantlay. You didn't pull the trigger on him. And that one hurts, man, because I don't think Burnsy is anywhere close to contention.
Dude, if we don't pick a winner this week, we're done with the picks. Like, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
One time in February at Pebble, we had a winner. That's embarrassing
right.
for guys that watch golf all weekend long.
I've picked a winner. Like, I had DJ at the Masters. You picked Morikawa, but the rules weren't – you remember at the PGA Championship, you had Morikawa. But at that rate, we were just doing collective score instead of outright winner. So you got squeezed on that one a little bit. But you're right. It's pathetic. It's tough, man. It's tough to pick an outright winner. Like, you know, we're only taking a few guys. Like, Cantlay's having a great tournament. Scheffler's in the running.
One week we took 10 each.
Yeah, that was at the PGA Championship. I mean, you make exceptions. We'll do that at Torrey Pines, you know, in a couple of weeks. We'll take a 20-pack.
Did Taylor Gooch
a 20-pack, and we're not picking the winner at the U.S. Open.
Gucci's going to make the cut. He's at one over. He's in the clubhouse. He's in.
There you go.
Cut line, I think, is two over. So the Gooch is through, man. Harold Varner's through. Our boy Harry Higgs went low, so he made the cut. Duffner's at even par. Doc Redman's at even par. Stewart Cink is at even par. We got a lot of tickets here this week, man.
Guys, see, I told you.
A lot of tickets.
Some solid picks.
I'm very proud of them. Very good stuff. Very good stuff. We had Alek Manoah on at 425 today. It was cool to catch up with him, and he's a confident guy, young guy, feels good about where he's at. Told us about taking advantage of the pandemic that he and his brother could keep training. Like, no professional innings thrown. He didn't face a live batter last year, and he's still up here. He barely got any experience at the majors or in pro ball in general, yet he's here and he's playing a part. And he's got a real opportunity to do some quality things here with the Jays. And they got a tough 13-game stretch coming up here. Houston at the White Sox, the Yankees, the Red Sox. It's about as tough as it gets. And here he is from MLB.com. He's down in Buffalo. Yes, he made the trip,
That's
got across
where
the border.
I want to ask him. Bring him in here, and I got a question for
him. Okay, here is Keegan Mathison. Go ahead.
Keegan, can you describe your mental state going in your car from Dunedin to Buffalo? I mean, that's not exactly the Pacific Coast Highway right there. Where were you at during that drive?
You know what, guys? Thankfully, I went from Toronto to Buffalo. Otherwise, I'd be coming to you from a much darker mental place.
Because didn't you drive down to Dunedin? I think you documented that, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. That was in a past life. I think that was several seasons ago, but I guess that was this spring training. It's been a strange one, guys. But thankfully, I was coming from Toronto, where I was stuck in my condo covering the scene from the couch. So not exactly coming from the beaches to downtown Buffalo, which, you know, a realtor would describe as a charming place with character, but it's been a good change.
Yeah, it's a bit of a downgrade, but I guess life is kind of normal down there, right? Like, what's the vibe like at the park? And they've made their upgrades, and there's people in the stands, 7,000-8,000 people in the stands, and it's obviously not a major league atmosphere, but it's a lot better than playing in front of nobody, I would assume.
A lot better, and especially if you are the Blue Jays, these are fans cheering for you. Instead of in Dunedin, you have a lot of fans looking for the Yankees, Phillies, or a lot of fans just trying to catch a ball game. So the last couple of nights, guys, there's been, 5,500, 6,000 fans here. But, you know, these are good Buffalo fans, so the beer sales are flowing. It's a loud crowd. They are passionate, and after a long time of not hearing fans, sounds a little closer to that 20 or 30. So it's a real change, especially when you look down the left field line from where I'm sitting here behind home plate. That's the fully vaccinated section where you do not need a distance. So people are jammed in right against one another. It's making me sweat a little bit, but it's an encouraging look into the future, I hope.
Yeah, it's kind of like a smoking or non-restaurant. You know, like the vaccinated, they're doing their thing, and then like one row over, you have to be distanced. It's like, what's the point?
Put your mask on, pal.
Yeah, go fire up a, you know, smoking or non, and it's one table's difference. But I guess it's all good, and it's healthier that way. But, hey, listen, I'm sure they're happy to be up there. Outside of the Yankees, I don't think they'll really have too many challengers. You know, Red Sox fans, they'll travel a little bit. Maybe if they play someone in the Midwest, like if they play Cleveland, something along those lines. But I think for the most part, like you said, Keegan, they should feel pretty good about 80-90% fandom on their side down in Buffalo.
Yeah, and that's something the players mention a lot, guys. And it's, you know, I have not played in front of crowds of that size. I don't know how to measure it. I don't know how to quantify this, put a number or a baseball stat on it. But it's something every player is bringing up unprompted. And Charlie Montoya as well, the coaches, what a difference that makes. Because if you are already playing in Dunedin, Florida's nice. You know, it can beat Toronto at some points during April and May for sure for these players lifestyle-wise. But when you are showing up to the ballpark, it's not that full. It's a single-A stadium. The walls aren't that high, so the ball is blowing around like you're back down in single-A again. Nothing about it feels major league. And especially when you are getting heckled by those 900 or 1,000 fans where all of a sudden there's not a roar to drown out the dumb guy in the first row and you have to hear everything he's saying. It doesn't feel major league. So getting here to Buffalo, I know this certainly is not the Sky Dome by any means, but much more realistic, and it's a step towards something more normal, something more representative of that.
We're chatting with Keegan Matheson of MLB.com. He's down in Buffalo covering the Jays, and Houston is in town for three. Then they go to the South Side for three. Then they're at Fenway for four, and then they're home to the Yankees for three. That's a 13-game stretch that is probably as tough as it gets in the American League. If we're being realistic here, do you think if you could get Charlie Montoya in a candid moment, do you think he would sign off on 6-7 right now, 7-6? Like, how greedy would he get if you propositioned him, I can give you a 500 record or just above. I can give you 7-6 right now for the next 13 games. Do you think he would take it?
I think you'd have to, honestly. Coming through this stretch where the Blue Jays are at and still without George Springer, we'll see when or if that timeline is updated whatsoever soon. But when you're dealing with the injuries they have, when you are dealing with this lineup without George Springer and naturally, along the way, guys like Vladdy, guys like Semien, they will have a bit of a cold streak eventually, naturally. But you know, at the same time, maybe that's a bit of old thinking. That's a bit of 2020 thinking, maybe even from me. You know, this Blue Jays team is still winning. They should be competing in this division, and now these are the games they need to win. You know, coming up against Houston, those Yankees games are going to be big, and I think this really highlights, guys, the fact that there's no such thing as early anymore. I know they're playing 162 games, but writing off games as being early is a little more difficult to do when you are chasing not just the Yankees, but the Red Sox, the Rays in the American League East. It's games like this and stretches like this. And when we're talking in late September, looking at standings, breaking down 2.5, 3.5 back, stretches like this are going to matter just as much. So it's a key one, even though we're only in June.
Without question, and the light at the end of the tunnel is you've got 12 games after that where seven of them are against Baltimore, and you got Miami in there, you got Seattle. I mean, those are bottom feeding teams, Baltimore in particular, who the Jays have still not played, which is pretty incredible. I think that's a good sign that they're gonna have a bunch of ball games against that team, but they're gonna have to pounce and take advantage. And you mentioned Springer, and obviously when he was signed, everyone knew where he was gonna hit in the lineup. He was gonna lead off. And even in spring when he got injured, it was like it's still his spot. And then Semien starts the year in the leadoff spot, didn't work out well. They move him around. He starts to catch fire, and now they've moved him up again. And 1-2-3, they've got arguably the hottest and best, you know, 1-3 in baseball right now. If Springer were to hypothetically return tonight, do you think he steps right back into the leadoff role, or might they ease him in a little bit further down the lineup?
It's a difficult decision, and it's the most interesting one the team's facing right now, I think. I think that leadoff spot still makes a ton of sense for him because he is a guy who's going to take a lot of his walks. Semien right now is playing amazing. He's playing like a top 10 player in Major League Baseball right now, period. That's where he's ranked in terms of WAR. Had a massive May OPS up near where Vladdy's was in the month of May. But when you look at him, this is a lot contact-based, a lot of hitting-based getting on. So is that sustainable? We'll see. You know, he is as hot as he's been in his career right now. But if you're talking about stacking up this lineup, guys, the idea of having Springer and Semien at the top with Vladdy behind, where do you put Bo? I guess a bit further down for now. But having those two with Vladdy coming right behind, man, you are going to start a lot of games up 1-0, 2-0 if you stack up those bats. And Springer, ideally, when he comes back, he is at 100%. Was that the case last time? Sure didn't look like it, but if he's coming back at 100%, I think you need him in those top two spots. Stack it up in front of Vladdy.
Have you seen any change in Vladdy with his performance getting a lot of recognition throughout the league? People are chanting MVP. Have you seen any difference in the athlete from being the up-and-comer kind of prospect to being like real deal Holyfield, like the guy in the team?
Zero, which is amazing. If I was 22 years old and people were chanting MVP, I would be showing up the next day with a gold chain that said
MVP. Coat.
Strutting in, absolutely. Alligator skin boots, everyone in town would know. But Vladdy is showing up every day, and no matter how hard I try to ask a question in a different way, he's focused on working hard, he's focused on his work, his routines, and that's good. You know, there's a lot of players who have not been the flashiest quote, the most expressive off of the field, but you see him on the field when that personality does come out, and that's what makes him special. I think you're going to see that more on the field. It's not going to be when he's talking or giving money quotes. That's fine. But when you see him on the field, last year he lost a bit of that spice, a bit of that fire, I think, out on the field. Now you're seeing it come out. It's a whole lot easier when you are the best player in baseball to have fun out there. But he is really not a guy who I have noticed being around him. Let that go to his head. And I suppose it helps that, you know, when you have been one of the bigger names in baseball since you were a teenager, it's a little easier to adapt to this, but still impressive because that's a big spotlight for a guy that's, even I forget sometimes, is still just 22 years old.
With Keegan Mathieson, we had Alec Manoah on earlier this afternoon, and I mean, he seems like a guy who's pretty confident. I think we know that based on the way he performs, the way he shows up to the stadium, talking about looking the part. He can dress for the best of them, but he's had a great start at Yankee Stadium. On Wednesday night, it got away from him pretty quickly, and his next two starts in terms of where he's slated to go, at the White Sox, at the Red Sox, two of the best offenses in baseball. They're really throwing him into the fire here. And I think they look at their staff right now. They know what they're going to get out of Ryu. They like what they're going to get out of Robbie Ray. He's been a stud. Beyond that, it's still a crapshoot. Like, I don't know what you're getting out of Stripling, what you're going to get out of Mats. And obviously they're hoping Manoah leans more towards Ryu and Ray as opposed to the other two guys. But what do you expect we're going to be thinking and what we're going to be seeing out of Manoah over the next two starts if he pitches where he's supposed to? And he goes through the south side of Chicago and Fenway Park and faces those two offenses.
Yeah, big couple starts coming up. I like that I'm bookending the show with Alec here. That's a big left tackle, right tackle offensive
yeah,
line.
It is.
We're building on the lineup here.
I love it.
But with Manoah coming up, man, you saw finally for the first time as a pro, and this guy was drafted in 19, the first time he ever failed or even stumbled, you're doing it in the big league. Now, if you stumble, if you screw up in single A, double A, okay, you can go out there and adjust against 19 and 20-year-olds, and you're probably better than them if you're Alec Manoah. Now you are looking at the best players in baseball. Different deal. So we're going to see how he bounces back. The confidence you guys know from talking to him, not an issue. That is there. That's never going to be an issue. But for him now, it will be trusting his pitches. I think we saw him the last outing in his last inning, guys. He shied away from that fastball. He was trying to get a little precise on the edges at points, and that's not who he is. He is a pitcher who is going to come out and punch the other team in the face and absolutely shove with aggressive pitching. And I think he'll get back to that, but you're right. He is the guy who represents upside in this pitching rotation because the Blue Jays still need another guy up in that number two, number three range. It was supposed to be Nate Pearson. That has not happened. And ideally, that might be Alec Manoah, but still a big ask for a guy who's not pitched a lot of innings. There will be some bumps along the way, but I think the aggression in his pitches, when his attitude and his pitching style match, that's when he's good. That last start, I think they drifted away from each other just a little bit.
Well, we'll find out soon. It's going to be a fun weekend down in Buffalo, and Houston's a quality team, as we know. Do you expect them to take heat from people in Buffalo? Like they're taking it in most places. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, Buffalo, they're not even technically in the league, but they're allowed to hate on Houston, right?
Yeah, I've never needed to have a relation for something to complain, so why not? You know,
yep.
I'm sure the good people of Buffalo will be some, banging on some cans and having fun with that. But there's not exactly a relation, but a lot of baseball fans have been waiting their turn, and I'm sure some folks in Buffalo thought they wouldn't get theirs. So it'll be a loud one. And, you know, there's some Bills fans in the house, I'm sure, guys. So
oh, yeah.
That's
tables
my answer. That's my
out.
Answer.
I like it. I like it. We expect it. Good stuff, Keegan. We always appreciate the time, man. We'll do it again soon.
You got it, guys. Take care.
There he is, Keegan Mathieson of MLB.com, Jays reporter. He's down there in Buffalo. He's been driving, man, putting on some kilometers.
Yeah.
Dunedin, Buffalo.
I mean, you want a vehicle, but also, like, you want to stay away from airports that you think, I don't know what his COVID situation
is. I don't think he really had a choice. He had to drive down there. That was his only way.
Yeah, he covers the team for MLB.com. Like, he's, you know, I think he would have had the choice to not go to Dunedin. I think he took that opportunity and said, why not? And down in Buffalo, if you're down there, I mean, take advantage. They're living, they're just on the other side of the border, but very different world right now.
Yeah, it looks like it's a different world. Like,
and the Jays will be hit that 85% vaccinated threshold, I guess, on Monday, they announced. So they're not far off.
What do you think
from
the chances are that they get in the dome?
I think it's getting higher and higher. I really
do.
You
think so?
I think so. I think the Canadian government, they've given the go-ahead to the Canadian hockey team to play in the conference or in the semifinals and maybe the finals if you get to a cup final. That opens the door. You know, these other teams, I'm sure, are not happy about that, or they're going to use it to basically campaign for themselves and say, you're letting this happen. Like, why is the hockey team different than us?
Well, it sounds like the only thing I could defend on that is it would be with strict protocols, and it's kind of like a one-off situation. Really, the most you would have is would any of these Canadian teams, even who are left, have home ice? Probably not, right?
Probably not. So you might be looking at six games. It's not as much as I'm saying if they get to a cup final and it goes 7-7, you might be looking at six. But I'm just an exception is an exception, I guess, is
correct.
The point. Is it different than playing, you know, 50 home games with the Jays? Absolutely. There's way more people coming across and all that. But still, you've opened the door where this time last year that was not a possibility. This time 2 or 3 months ago it wasn't a possibility. And I hope we're
crossed.
I mean, I don't again, I feel like I've been saying the same thing for 16 months.
Month
but
away.
Yeah, it does feel like into early June with the numbers and the vaccines and, you know,
it
eventually
feels like
you
it's changing. It feels
I hope
like
so.
Changing.
I mean, the levee's got to break at some point. We got to at least pretend like we can get back to normal.
Well,
come on.
I know in Alberta, I got a text late last night from a coach and saying, like, are you coming out for Stampede?
Yeah, that's
like,
humming out there, Stampede.
They are wide open July 1st. Like, they're open now in Alberta, but they are open for business July 1st to get the economy going, and Stampede is what Calgary is going to use to get that going. Can you imagine? Like, I can't even imagine. I talked to a buddy there today. He's like, you're going to come out for it. I said, well, if I come out, I'm just going to sit at your house. Like, I'd be scared to be sitting at a bar.
When is the Stampede?
Like, July 1st. Like in
it starts on July 1st.
July, like in that first week of July. Like,
yep.
I'm not – it's usually like that first Thursday. There's a sneak peek night, the Thursday, the night before. So it's the Thursday before the long weekend. It's usually like July 4th.
I love it. I mean, a lot of it's like outdoors and patios and stuff like that. I mean, listen, I think you let people make the choice. And I understand that, you know, things can get away from you, all that kind of stuff. But – I think we're getting closer to that here in Ontario. I get that impression. There's reports that they might open or stage one earlier than they said. They never make a full announcement. They make multiple announcements saying there's going to be an announcement.
Right.
But, you know, like patios, I think, should be doable. And why can't the dome, if it's open, why can't the team be up here? And furthermore, why can't there be some fans scattered around the park? I feel like that should be very doable, but –
well, let's hope it's coming.
Yeah,
it
the second doses are coming, and like that, you know, that is moving in the direction that it's supposed to be. We're obviously slower than other places around the world, but
right.
You know,
oh yeah.
Still, the first doses are what they are. So, let's see. I to answer your question, to get back to it, yes, I think the Jays will be up here. It could be Labor Day, might be in September, and maybe they play 15 games at home. But it's something I'm getting to a point where I expect to happen.
Yeah,
and I would expect
you would
TFC
think they
would
want to go through the trouble of moving everything here for 15 games.
I think they'd have to. I think if they got the green light, they'd have because you can't be fighting to come home and then you finally get the green light and say it's not worth our time anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think they'd come back for one game, just to play one game. I think they would. I think they'd have to. I think ownership would step in and say, you don't have a choice. You're coming home. Like, this is the park. You guys have been complaining. We've been fighting on your behalf. Now we get the green light. Let's do it. So yeah, that would be my expectation. And then the next step is, you know, the Leafs and the Raptors at Scotiabank and what happens come October and where we're at from that standpoint. That's still a long ways away.
I'm expecting open for business by then. I am. I mean, but I'm expecting but there schools. You go.
If it's open for business in October, why would it not be for the Jays outside in a, you know, an outdoor park more or less in September? Like,
yeah. No,
why
not? You're right. I'm hoping for schools to be open, all of that stuff, September for some reason.
They better be.
I know.
Like that's non-negotiable considering what just happened this week. But anyway, we'll do some trunk slamming down at the Memorial, tracking what's going on down there. I don't think any of our guys. I think Bubba might be slamming his trunk, but outside of that, I think we got some pretty good picks here. And Jays again in action this weekend. We got a couple of games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. LeBron is out. Clippers could be out tonight. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, so the Memorial Tournament is underway. We're into the second round. Patrick Cantlay shooting a 5-under today. He's at 8-under. Scottie Scheffler sniffing around. He's going to get one on tour. It's just a matter of time. And my boy Morikawa's up there. Johnny Rahm's up there. Justin Thomas is up there. But there's always some trunk slamming, including your boy Matt Kuchar, who I'm sure is at home now, potentially in a cast.
With his black socks on and his hairy legs.
Yeah, brown corduroys, black socks.
He's the guy
shoes.
With the old school corduroy pants that crosses his legs and his legs showing with his brown dress socks, and it's the most horrifying scene. Oh, by the way, I have to get to something. It's a debate I've had numerous times, Brian, and you described Cleveland, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
As being in the Midwest. Cleveland and Detroit are not in the Midwest.
They're in the East.
Yes. Sorry.
What has that got to do with it?
You guys are such dummies. They're in the Midwest. They're both in the Midwest.
They're on the same stratosphere as Toronto.
For starters, no, they're not. You don't go south and hit Detroit. Or yes.
No. Detroit
is 3 hours south of here. You're a dummy.
They're west.
Go to school.
That...
And Cleveland is east of here.
You are
outrageously
offside.
No, I'm not
going to
back
take.
That. I'm not
as
backing
dumb as
those
it gets.
Statements.
You
I'm
jumped
sorry.
In their noodles and said they're east.
No,
you're on his team, man.
Hold on.
Yeah,
what?
Now are you 30 under at the No Balls Open now? They're in the east.
They're in the east time zone, but if I had to drive there,
they are southwest
from here.
They're in the Midwest of the United States.
Hayes, how could you drive 4 hours on the 401 and all of a sudden you're in Detroit and you're in the Midwest? Come on. It's not.
Guess what? Toronto has a Midwest vibe to it. We're not that close to the ocean, man. Like if we were swallowed up by the States, Toronto would be in the Midwest. It would be closer to the Midwest than it would be the East. There it is. The map of the Midwest right there. Detroit, Michigan, Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland, Chicago's for me, the capital. Cleveland is on the cusp of it. That's all I was
But I'm just telling you, Ohio
map?
Is
Who
considered.
Did that map? Like, that's...
Well, that's a map that's of official. The world. Like, that's a North America map.
Well, no, that's the Midwest is right there. What you just saw there,
did
that
you
is
notice Cleveland was east of Toronto, therefore not Midwest. It's
but
not the Midwest, neither is Detroit.
In terms of the definition of the country... And I'm not American. It doesn't really matter to me one way or the other. But Ohio is considered a part of the Midwest. It's a region. As you guys know, they have four regions in the States.
Yes,
they have East, Midwest, West, and South. That's what
they have. I get it. I feel like Ohio's right on the cusp, though. Like
It can be right on the cusp. Good for you. That doesn't mean anything. I think
Cleveland,
it's on the cusp.
I know. It's just I have friends from Cleveland, and I know I didn't realize Cleveland was that close to Toronto.
It is.
Like,
it's a really quick drive. It's like it's probably a four-hour drive to Cleveland.
That's right.
Wow.
And it's,
I didn't
like
know
if I hear
that.
Anyone, I've never heard somebody say, I'm from the Midwest. Detroit, actually. No, you don't say that.
Yes, you do. If you're from Detroit, you take pride in being from the Midwest. I know that from
experience.
Yeah,
I'm looking at it right now. I know where Toronto is. Like, Toronto isn't as
east or
anything.
What the hell does that mean?
My grandfather lived in Flint, Michigan my whole life. And he's from New York. So he was as New Yorker as you could get living in the Midwest. But I have spent many, 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 many days in Michigan growing up. It's the Midwest. Like, it's just, it's not.
Yeah, you know what?
It's not up for debate.
I stand corrected. I'm looking at it. I knew Detroit was east, like southeast of Toronto. I didn't realize Cleveland was that close. I thought Cleveland was more south.
It never comes up.
I don't care who's responsible for that map that you drew like Donald Trump just there. And I'm surprised you didn't have Sharpie marks on it like Ronnie Trump.
Right.
That is not accurate, dude.
That was one of the greatest map adjustments of all time. Remember when he did that?
He said, Mr. Trump, it didn't affect that area. He grabs the Sharpie and goes, yeah, it did affect that area, right?
It actually did. Let me just make a quick adjustment.
That was honestly one of the most outrageous things I think I've ever seen with a Sharpie.
Yeah. That had to be like people in the room must have been like, I think he just did that. I'm not sure because I can't believe he just did that, but I think he just did that.
I will say this, regardless of where your political, I guess, thoughts, where they fall, isn't the world quieter? Like, I don't know why. It's just quieter.
It's quieter because, yeah, I mean, listen,
I don't think the world could have handled him with the pandemic, like him on top of it.
But what I'm saying is, like, every day we're not on this show going, did you see on Twitter? Did you see this? Do you see it? Like, and the news
are
now
gone. They're doing that with what the dummies up here do. That's what they're doing. That's the dummies up here are taking the spotlight for that.
I understand. But what I'm saying is that I haven't turned on CNN in months. And, you know, for a while there were certain stations you turned on. You're like, let's see what's going on. What are they talking about?
Well, because everything was
today?
So dramatic, too.
Everything was so dramatic.
Everything was like, right. Oh, I can't believe it, or this is shock value. Right. It was like the Rob Ford era up here. Like, the Rob Ford era, when the news first broke, there will never be a political story like that ever in the rest of our lives. Like, nothing.
Rob Ford was on Jimmy Kimmel.
What year was that? I feel like I just moved to Toronto.
Yeah,
when
that
would have
been, I don't know. Yeah, probably around 2012, something like that, he went in. And then it was shortly after that. It might have been in 13. Because remember, it was Gawker, I believe, that first reported it, the crack video and all that. And then it was The Star and Robin Doolittle. And it's just crazy, man. Is it Daniel Dale, I think? Yeah, he's the one that's down in the States now. And he made a career off Trump, too. Like,
well,
just
that guy's a nobody now. Isn't
he's
Canadian,
still,
too?
Well, he's still there, but yeah.
I don't like him. I blocked him on Twitter. I didn't like him.
I didn't know he was bothering you on Twitter to the point where
every time you could turn on Twitter, like, one of his fact checks would come up because somebody's retweeting it. He was so arrogant about it.
He got all the way to CNN. Like, he's probably making a lot of dough, man. He left the Star. He was with the Star. He was their correspondent down in D.C. And
yeah,
see you later, man.
Too big of a hero for me. But that's fine.
That's
Good on him.
Yeah, good Canadian boy doing his thing. I don't know what he's doing now. I don't know who he's fact-checking anymore.
I'll fact-check you. My buddy just said, I'm from Windsor, so does that mean I'm from the Midwest? No.
Yeah, Midwest is in the States. He would be. If Windsor were swallowed up by the States, you can answer your buddy with yes, exclamation point. He would be. Yes, he would. He's right across the river.
You'll
see
him at your golf course. You can talk to him yourself. So it's just,
okay.
It's not, it's
who am
not
I
Midwest.
Looking for? Is this guy going to come swinging because he's from Windsor and he's insulted that I considered him a member of the Midwest?
No, he'll approach you with a coffee and he'll have a conversation. But
I know who you're talking about. Yeah, no. He can come to me directly. He's got my number.
I don't care. People are sending me maps. Stop sending me maps. I don't care about the
you
maps.
You brought it up.
Consider Detroit. I've had this conversation with millions. It's just not the Midwest. It's the East.
It's
they should
not.
Be cut off and in different regions.
It's just not, man. It's not. It's not up for us to define the regions of another country.
We're in the Midwest too. Then
we would be.
Cleveland,
I'm telling you,
is east of us.
If Ontario was a part of the States, we would be in the Midwest. We would be because we're closer to Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago than we are New York. I've driven to New York. It's what is it? A 9-hour drive?
Yeah, I get it.
We're closer to Detroit and Cleveland.
Are we actually going to get Al's brother to put up a poll because the grappler's off? If Toronto was in the States, would we be considered Midwest?
Go ahead. Yeah. I don't know if anyone's put any thought into
it. But I don't think people care. Like,
I know. No one should care. It's a completely ridiculous hypothetical.
The only one that threw me was Cleveland. I didn't realize that Cleveland was that
never comes
to up
as a road trip, too.
And then
too.
You turned on me and started
I
sewering
did turn on
me.
You
bought
I,
in right away, and then you sewered me.
No, I... I thought you were talking about Eastern time zone. And then I was like, no, I know exactly from a geographical standpoint where Detroit is, because I would fly there or sometimes drive there to call games. So it's not that far, but I know you're going west, southwest from Toronto, which I didn't realize it was that far into the Midwest.
I never thought of it either. Like, living here my whole life and Cleveland, it's probably just because it's not a destination that a lot of people circle, like, got to get to Cleveland, with all due respect.
Right, right.
But that is why, like, when the Jays are in Cleveland, there's a lot of Blue Jay fans that travel there, like a ton of them that are down there. But I had never thought of it growing up. And I remember Todd Hayes, who was working with us at TSN years ago, he made a trip down there to watch, I want to say, like, Raptors Cavs or something. He's like, I just decided to drive down. And yeah. It dawned, I'm like, really, to Cleveland? He's like, it's like 4 hours.
I've gone to a Cleveland baseball game.
Like, driven from Toronto to go down there?
It's 4 hours.
That's money, man. Like, you just got to go around the lake. What we need is a bridge or a tunnel that just cuts off the lake, and that would change everything. Because the Great Lakes, man, that's...
But isn't...
Like, we get to Buffalo in 15 minutes if we had just a tunnel from downtown right to Buffalo.
I would love that.
Dude, I can see Buffalo from this window right here.
Yeah.
There is shuttles. I believe there's shuttles. Well, on the lake.
On the lake?
I'm sure you could do that. But anyway.
Well, either way, I would love that. I would love to go to Buffalo. Cleveland's a gritty city. I think it's a lot. You have to appreciate it to spend some time there, because it's aesthetically, I don't believe, the most beautiful city. I've only been there a couple times.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily number one. It's not exactly, Paris or New York.
Exactly.
Anyway, we'll come back and look ahead to the weekend. We got a couple of big games in the Stanley Cup playoffs, including the Habs and the Jets. The Jets, first of four without Mark Scheifele. How do they respond? How do they even this thing up tonight? It's basically a must-win for them, or real close to it. Because you're going back to Montreal, 2,500 people will be waiting for you.
Yeah.
Right? They'll be in the stands at the Bell Center. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Mailin' in Friday on Overdrive, brought to you by Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment made to chill. I just went upstairs, a couple of my neighbors out there having some Coors Lights, just easing into the weekend, just, socially distancing, doing their thing, a couple of pints and feeling good about things. And I'm watching the hockey game tonight and the Blue Jay game tonight. It's a big one with Houston in town down in Buffalo. You're going to have some fans. Our boy Jack Armstrong may be back in attendance. Having a Coors Light,
awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if he is for sure or not, but he could be, and he should be, because we love when Jack's in attendance. And Habs, Jets tonight. We'll see how the Winnipeg Jets react, right? How do you react without Scheifele? It's not going to be an easy one to adjust to, man.
I told you that Pierre-Luc Dubois, man. I got an ISO on that guy. I got the old ISO cam on him. Yeah, just want to see what he can do. I love seeing how athletes react in those situations.
Well, I think Wheeler and Ehlers, though, too, right?
I was going to say,
two studs Nikolai on the wing have to step up big time.
Kyle Connor. Like, yep. They've got some guys they got to get going. That's ultimately what it is. They had some looks on Price, but Price was good, too, in game one. So they're going to have to, try and get some traffic and some sustained pressure. But, I think it'll be another tight battle. Like, Montreal, they got out to the early 2-0 lead. You're going to need Hellebuck to make some big saves, too. So they need all their big boys going.
Yep. It may come down to that, right? Like, Hellebuck is capable of standing on his head. Like, that would be the great equalizer. You take Scheifele out of the lineup.
Right.
Hellebuck stands on his head. Doesn't matter who's playing. If you can't score, and if you can't break loose, and the Habs offense struggles. I mean, they did not in game one. They did not in game one. But we saw it. Even the games they won against Toronto, they won 2-1 in game one. They won 3-1 with an empty netter in Game 7. Like, they're looking for low-scoring, low-event games. That's what they want to play. And Winnipeg, that's the beauty of that. That's the a guy like Scheifele can maybe break through that, and clearly you're not going to have access to him. But if that's going to be the case, that's doable, right? Like, it may be even more – you may be in even more trouble, or fearful that you're in more trouble, if it was going to be a high-flying 5-4 game and you don't have a top gun who can score for you and put up offense, where more than likely the Habs are not looking to do that anyway.
Yeah.
So might actually be okay for Winnipeg in the end.
The guy that continues to impress me is Suzuki. Like, he's a hell of a player.
That goal he scored the other night, man, that was an impressive goal.
Move, man.
Yeah, it was. Like to pull that back and wait, like to have that kind of patience.
Yeah.
That's what Marner tried to do it, and he couldn't do it. Suzuki pulled it off.
He's a nice player. He's
a really
better
good player.
Too.
Yeah, really good player. And Kotkaniemi just scores in the playoffs.
I know.
Like, all he does is score goals in the playoffs.
Crazy. It is crazy.
Like a nothing season, not even in the lineup game one against the Leafs, and now he's making an impact.
Well, that's what you need. You need guys to step up when they get opportunity. So we'll see what they've got tonight. I mean, that's the one thing that you could continue to come back to is, can they sustain it? They've won four games in a row, and they're playing kind of the same way. They found a template, right? Like, that's the one thing. It's low, like you said, Hayes, low-scoring games, tight checking, get good goaltending, get some timely goals and some big plays from some veteran guys. Like, Perry and Staal were really good last game. And that defensive corps really held up. That Sherratt's that's a player. And Edmondson,
really
I thought, had
he's
his best
really
game
well.
Of the playoffs in game one. Like, he's he's an effective guy because he's a big guy and plays with a little bite. So that top four looked pretty good, too, for Montreal.
Well, and that has come up. You know, I've seen a few people address that as we continue to look back a little bit on the Maple Leaf series, is the Habs brought in guys who have won before. The Leafs have brought in guys who have not. You know, like
want to win.
Thornton, Spezza, right. Foligno, where they went with Staal's got a cup ring, Perry's got a cup ring, Edmondson's got a cup ring, you know.
Yeah.
Now, Bogosian had a cup ring, too. Like, you could add him to the list. But, and I don't know how much that's actually worth, but it is something to be noted that these are guys who have actually won it as opposed to try to figure things out regardless of what their age is.
I just want a good player that can make a play. I don't care about age. A guy could be 21 or he could be 35. I really don't care. I want a guy to make a good play. If you're not if you're not the superstar type, it's just go out there and play hard and make a play. I really don't care how old you are.
I think Kyle is going to change his thought process on – I keep calling them the father figures, you know, to help, you know, the young guys along and that. Like, I think he's going to say, young guys, go and sing.
It was irrelevant.
Go and play. Exactly.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
And you need the depth players, the guys on value contract, whatever, however you term them, because you have to pay those slots in your lineup a lower amount of money compared to other organizations just based on the way that you're structured.
Right.
Fine. You've got to find guys who can contribute. Doesn't matter their age. Doesn't matter if they won or haven't won, if they're good guys or whatever. You've got to be able to contribute. And, you know, that's, I think Kyle will be focused, hyper-focused on that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right because when, you know, it was go time, it didn't matter Joe Thornton, his age, how great of a guy he is, how great he was in the room. He couldn't bring it. He couldn't play well enough. Wayne Simmons, the same thing. I feel for Simmons because before the wrist injury, he was playing really well.
Yeah, he was.
Down a roll, and he just never got back on the rails. He never got it back. And he's had so many injury problems over the last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, you take Tavares out of the lineup. You had Foligno playing at, like, I don't know, 70%. By the end, he was on the fourth line, barely contributing. They just didn't have anything. Like, those guys that they were hoping – would bring the veteran leadership and also chip in. Just it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So if you're and that is what separates, you know, these superstars from the other superstars as well, is that they get paid way more than them. They get paid way more than Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak, McKinnon. You know, Landeskog's coming up. I'm curious to see what he's going to get paid. I'm sure he'll stick around in Colorado and they have room to make it work. But and he's not a guy that's a $9 or $10 million guy, but he's a really good player.
Yeah,
and
that's
Picard's going to get paid. You're right.
And Grubauer's unrestricted there. So what do you do with him?
Pay.
I was trying to take a look at what a marketplace would be for him if Markstrom got six, if Matt Murray got 6.25. You know, like
if he wins the cup, he's saying, I want one more million than Markstrom, wouldn't he?
Well,
he's up for the Vezina, too.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have to be in that neighborhood at least, something with a six in it. But again, is Colorado's got to look at Makar. They got other young kids. You've got McKinnon's not that far away. You know, Landeskog is, if you're going to keep him. Like, when you win in this tight cap era, you got to try and keep the band together. Some guys get thrown overboard, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a Donskoy. Maybe that's a Kadri. You know,
Well, even Tampa, like, Kucherov wasn't on the books. this year, right. So they didn't have to worry about it. Next year he will be 9-5 back on the books.
Twice they waived Tyler Johnson, who's playing really well for them, by the way. Like, he's a hell of a player. Twice he got waived. Like,
right.
they found a way to make it work. Colorado might have to do that. Seattle coming into the equation might
help
relieve some of that pressure.
Yeah,
you know,
could help for sure. Yeah, Seattle, man, they're in it. They're in it now. Yep. Like, the expansion draft is you know, about a month away, just over a month away, and
yeah,
you're gonna have the NHL draft and then free agency, and they're supposed to be back on the clock. You know, I don't know if they're gonna start, you know, first week of October, but I would think by the second or third week of October they're going, right?
Yeah.
So it's gonna be a quick turnaround, for sure. So a couple of games in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. Jays in action this weekend down in Buffalo with Houston in town. A big one in the NBA playoffs, as well as the Clippers look to survive against Luka and the Mavs. So chock full of action. The Memorial continues all weekend. We'll see what happens. We're out of here. Enjoy your nights. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy your weekends. We're back Monday at...
Hazy B, your hot takes are in the Midwest. 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. It's the all-in clear-out sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue S for 0% APR for 84 months, or get an up to $5,500 cash purchase bonus on select other models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.